butterfly in the sky.
Hello and welcome to Red Book Club. Today we are discussing Communism in the Family, a really important work by Alexander Kollontai. I'm excited to get into this work, but first of all, we'll go through and do our names and pronouns, and we're going to answer what our favorite cartoon is.
My name is Connor. I use he, him pronouns, and I really like that old Spider-Man cartoon from the 60s. You know, the one where they've got the meme where he's like pointing at himself. It's really camp and really cheesy and a lot of fun.
My name is Anna. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm like a Digimon girl, I think.
Hi, my name's Andrew, he, him pronouns, and I used to religiously watch Scooby-Doo. It is my favorite cartoon ever.
I'm Jess, they, them pronouns, and I would say it's a cross. I don't know if it's a cross, but both The Simpsons and BoJack Horseman are right up there. The Simpsons, however, is like, you know, got a few decades on it and didn't like stab me in the heart. So that's got that going for it.
Talia, she, her. This is really hard because I love cartoons. God, I'm going to go with Aeon Flux. One is super fucking weird. And I think it really cemented my love of weird anime, which I'm outing myself right now as an anime person. Not a weeb, but I do enjoy anime.
Not a weeb.
Not a weeb.
So I'm really excited to do this work today. I am super annoying about trying to get everybody to read Alexander Kollontai, so I'm really glad that we are covering one of her really important works today. And it's really important because it was really controversial, specifically because she had views on the family unit that were not popular at the time and probably are still not super popular, except for to me. So this essay was first published in 1920, and it's one of Kollontai's more, or it's one of her shorter works, which is fantastic, and that's why we're doing it today. So she was the only non-man member of the Bolshevik Central Committee, and her work is unique in the realm of Marxist theorists, as she often relays her points through works of fiction that illustrate the perspectives of non-men, written in accessible language for working people. And it's really unfortunate that a lot of the people that she wrote these works for never actually got to read it because she was ostracized due to her focus on sexuality, morality, and the reformation of the idea of the family unit. So with that in mind, we'll go ahead and get into the text. Our first section here is women's role in production, its effect upon the family. And in this section, it's not very long, but essentially what Kollontai is illustrating is that the old family unit social model is no longer useful. So the economy itself doesn't depend on wives doing domestic labor in the marketplace, being sold, basically them giving their labor power for free and being sold in the marketplace. So at this point, wives are now working in the factories, and the economy doesn't depend on their exploited labor anymore in order to function.
I just had a question. There's a part in here where she says, divorce by mutual agreement now takes no more than a week or two to obtain. Do any of you know what it was like to get a divorce if it wasn't mutually agreeable?
I think it didn't happen. So the quote I've got here is, she says, divorce has been made easier in Soviet Russia. The decree of the Council of People's Commissars issued on the 18th of December 1917 means that divorce is no longer a luxury that only the rich can afford. Henceforth, a working woman will not have to petition for months or even years to secure the right to live separately from a husband who beats her and makes her life a misery with his drunkenness and uncouth behavior. Divorce by mutual agreement now takes no more than a week or two to obtain. And these are often referred to at the time as no-fault divorces.
Mm-hmm.
So it does appear that it's somewhere between a couple weeks and a couple months is the amount of time that it takes.
Yeah, so previously she was saying that it could even take years to get a divorce, but I think it was entirely contingent upon whether the husband wanted to get divorced or not. And that was reflected also in the Western world at the time.
And still now.
And still now,
right?
Still very much now.
Yeah, I was
not even
too.
Married and it's like, been a year and a half. Holy shit.
Yeah, so the UK is currently looking at implementing easier divorces. For a very long time, the only reason you could get a divorce was for adultery. Current divorce law requires you need to give evidence of one or more of five things, and three of them are based on fault, and two of them are like when you're separated for a certain amount of time instead. So it's like 2 years or 5 years. And the other reasons are adultery, unreasonable behavior, or desertion. But that's like
Jesus. Current, that's it.
Yeah, that's what the law currently is. So like the UK is looking at changing it to make it, it's not someone's fault for the divorce. They're trying to like take away the aspect of blame to make it easier for families to move on after a divorce. But it's still 100 years behind the Soviet Union.
Yeah, seriously. That kind of sums up that section, though. She says there's no point in not facing up to the truth. The old family in which the man was everything and the woman nothing. The typical family where the woman had no will of her own, no time of her own, and no money of her own is changing before our very eyes. But there's no need for alarm. It is only our ignorance that leads us to think that the things we are used to can never change. Nothing could be less true than the saying, as it was, so it shall be. So, yeah, I appreciate that because I think we hear so much like traditionalism, especially when it comes to this topic about, well, this is the way it's always been. I mean, for one, it hasn't, but then also it's just, there's no reason to be worried because this isn't the only way that humans can function. And she goes in to demonstrate that.
Like that part really stuck out to me because I keep on thinking about these older communists now who are essentially TERFs. And do you know what I mean? Like they think there's like some war against women when you allow trans people to exist. And it's like, you folks need to read this that was written 100 years ago that shit changes. Get over it. Like,
yep. In fact, Colin Tice says that we're used to the fact that a young girl is expected to remain a virgin into marriage. There are tribes where it is a pride to have had many lovers and where the women decorate their arms and legs with the corresponding number of bracelets.
I want to be a part of that.
I know, right? I really prefer that to purity culture. But I felt like this was almost like the mission statement here or like the thesis of the paper. She says, our job is to decide which aspects of our family system are outdated and to determine which relations between the men and women of the working and peasant classes and which rights and duties would best harmonize with the conditions of life in the new workers' Russia. That which is in be with the new life should be maintained, while all that is old and outdated and derives from the cursed epoch of servitude and domination of landed proprietors and capitalists should be swept aside together with the exploiting class itself and the other enemies of the proletariat and the poor.
Amen.
Yeah, I mean, this section particularly just brings us right to Caliban and the Witch and the accumulation on the bodies of women. I mean, we're talking about undoing all of these processes that had to happen to build this patriarchal capitalist society.
In the next section, I even actually made a note saying primitive accumulation and like highlighted a whole paragraph because it's exactly what we're reading in Caliban and the Witch, only it's Colin Tye didn't have the, you know, feminist movement of phrasing and activity in order to like frame her argument around like Federici has. And so she's just making the blatant factual argument about primitive accumulation of women because realistically, we all know we're working for free. So it's not like it's a surprise to us that our labor is being exploited. So one thing she also says in this section, and I felt like I extremely heavily identified with. She says, what kind of family life can there be if the wife and mother is out at work for at least 8 hours and counting the traveling is away from home for 10 hours a day? Her home is neglected. The children grow up without any maternal care, spending most of the time out on the streets, exposed to all the dangers of the environment. The woman who is wife, mother, and worker has to expend every ounce of energy to fulfill these roles. She has to work the same hours as her husband in some factory, printing house, or commercial establishment. And then on top of that, she has to find the time to attend to her household and look after her children. Capitalism has placed a crushing burden on women's shoulders. It has made her a wage worker without having reduced her cares as a housekeeper or mother. Woman staggers beneath the weight of this triple load. She suffers. Her face is always wet with tears. Life has never been easy for woman, but never has her lot been harder and more desperate than that of the millions of working women under the capitalist yoke in this heyday of factory production.
Really unfortunate that nothing has changed.
Literally nothing.
That's what I was going to say. We're still here.
Yeah.
That's my life.
It's even the exact same amount of travel time and like shift length.
Yeah. <horrible. sighs> I don't have kids either, or a husband. So, like, when I did have a husband, I totally get it. Like, mm-hmm. I can't even imagine having a child on top of it. There's like not enough time in the day.
There just isn't enough time for anything. Like right now, I'm essentially working two jobs. I'm watching my child and also doing this.
Yeah.
Because I don't have time to not be pulling double duty. I think that's basically that whole section. So the next section is housework ceases to be necessary. And in this one, she is telling us about how the collective labor of the workforce has replaced the need for several types of intensive domestic labor by employing workers to do tasks that wives used to do, like mending and spinning wool and linen, making pickles and jams, she says, candles, those sorts of things are now available because they were made in factory settings or in the marketplace where the worker can just go pick it up. And she says, this is the section that I highlighted about primitive accumulation. She says, in our grandmother's day, all this domestic work was necessary and beneficial. It ensured the well-being of the family. The more the mistress of the house applied herself, the better the peasant or craftsman's family lived. Even the national economy benefited from the housewife's activity, for the woman did not limit herself to making soup and cooking potatoes, i.e. satisfying the immediate needs of the family. She also produced such things as cloth, thread, butter, etc., which had a value as commodities that could be sold in the market. And every man, whether peasant or worker, tried to find a wife who had, quote, hands of gold, for he knew that a family could not get along without this, quote, domestic labor. The interests of the whole nation were involved, for the more work the woman and the other members of the family put into making cloth, leather, and wool, the surplus of which was sold in the neighboring market, the greater the economic prosperity of the country as a whole. And so I think she really lays out how dependent the economy was on exploited labor of women, specifically that women's value as a wife was contingent on their ability to be good domestic laborers.
Yeah, and here we're talking about how the relations of production directly translate onto, like, the family relations. This is the dialectical relationship between the mode of production and the social relations that we all exist under on the family level.
So there's one thing we need to consider as well, which is the type or the form of family which exists as well. There's a strong socially conservative portion of the population across, like, North America and, well, probably the global North, who believe that the nuclear family is the kind of ultimate perfected mode of having a family. Whereas all this housework that women were having to do, previously this could have been shared among an extended family. There's evidence of nuclear families existing as long ago as 4,600 years ago in the Stone Age, but to call it the traditional family, as it's often called by conservatives, I guess it's pretty disingenuous, because I'd say for much more of the time between then and now, the extended family has been, it's been a more popular way, or a more common way of raising a family.
Right. So she does move on to say that the family no longer produces and that it only consumes. And that's where she's demonstrating this shift. And now she's saying that the family model as a means of upholding society is, with their domestic labor, is just no longer necessary at all. And so women in Russia at the time have lost their necessity of being exploited labor workers for the family and are just workers for the state. And she's starting to explain that, well, I guess I maybe should have said in the beginning that there are three different concerns that essentially are removing autonomy from women in society. And that's their need to be a mother, there need to be a worker, and there need to be a house worker. I think that's what it was. And so she's essentially laying down and explaining why the society no longer has use for any of those roles for women. And she's explaining now that the domestic labor that wives used to do are no longer done by wives. They're done by just workers in factories. And nobody has time to do that stuff anymore. So who would?
Yeah, and everything left to women, like sweeping and stuff, that all produces, creates no new value.
Right. Dead labor. She says that the wives of the rich have long since been freed from those, or from these irritating and tiring domestic duties. Why should working women continue to be burdened with them? Which I thought was a fair thing to say, right? Because we've talked about this several times. Things being illegal or unavailable, those just aren't boundaries or rules that apply to the rich. Those are only rules and boundaries that apply to the working class, and they always have been.
I love her future world of giving working class women the opportunity to devote her evenings to reading, attending meetings, and concerts.
That
is the most ideal life.
Right.
For me personally, that's what I do. That's my life. And I only get it because I'm not married and I don't have kids.
Right.
But my house is a mess.
She even says that, like, making meals for the family shouldn't be something that mothers or women have to do anymore because restaurants are becoming a thing now, is essentially what she was saying. So yeah. I thought it was cute that. Like, cute because, you know, we're in this capitalist hellscape. But how she was like, women would take their meals in restaurants now, and that community restaurants would just become available all over the place because nobody would have time to cook meals every single day in their homes for just a couple people. And I feel like that just makes so much more sense than restaurants now. The way they are. Like, why would you have 17 Italian restaurants and one Thai restaurant? Like, if this was the people's restaurants, you wouldn't.
Mm. I like the idea of communal kitchens.
Right. Right. She says, thus the four categories of housework are doomed to extinction with the victory of communism, and the working woman will surely have no cause to regret this. Communism liberates women from her domestic slavery and makes her life richer and happier.
This is off topic, but... Does in your edition, does it say liberates worm?
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. Free worm. Okay. Sorry.
I just thought this section kind of interestingly connected back to how this is like about taking the value which, you know, through primitive accumulation was absorbed by men, and it was about devaluing, you know, women's domestic labor and taking them out of the workforce. Now, with the proletarianization of women, they're trying to, like, restore this value into the hands of women and create a new independent relationship between men and women.
Right.
And these, like, domestic burdens can now be, like, transformed into, like, a new domestic workforce.
Right. And because the economy no longer depends on the subjugation of women, we can transition out of that, is essentially what she's moving toward here. The next section here is the one that I highlighted the most in, but is also probably the most personally close to my heart, because I feel like this is the biggest barrier on women's liberation right now, and directly ties back to the idea of primitive accumulation on the backs of uterus owners historically. So the section is the state is responsible for the upbringing of children. And what she's going over here, or the point she's trying to make, is that working parents don't have the time or means to educate and care for the new generation of children because now both parents are workers. The state provides childcare and education as well as support for pregnant and nursing parents, and a new relationship between men and women of society is beginning to take hold, where men and women see each other as equals and comrades. And this enables a new kind of marriage based on comradeship, love, and mutual respect, and replaces the old form of marriage that relied on the servitude of women. She starts to talk about how working families just don't have the time to take care of children because they're busy working all day long, and they end up spending most of their time on the streets. And these children end up not having any maternal care, and are not getting regular meals, and it's just not good for anybody. And so now the state has established these basically centers of care for every life stage of a child's upbringing, from the time that the mother gets pregnant until the time that that child is now a regular working member of society. The state has taken care of every step of that. And she talks about in here that there are some times in the current world that she's in where poorly off families have to have their children join the workforce as early as 10 years old, and that that should not be the way that the family functions. And so I think this is something that Anna had quoted, and it says that under capitalism, children were frequently and too frequently a heavy and unbearable burden on the proletarian family. I think we kind of are afraid to admit that socially as parents because there's so much stigma about being able to do it on your own. But like, realistically, being a parent is extremely difficult, and especially with absolutely no social support for the caring of your child. And so this was like, this was like the dream, reading this section.
Totally. Like, collective childcare, like, actual emphasis on people's education. I love, she just says, communist society will come to the aid of the parents after that, what you just quoted. Oh, and just as housework withers away, so the obligations of parents to their children wither away gradually until finally society assumes the full responsibility. Come on, society.
I feel like children in a capitalist society are just used as pawns, especially in America, where the Republicans place so much value on the traditional family, quote unquote, and then strip away all of the state aid for children. Like, it's just disgusting and vile. What the, even Democrats do the same, because they also vote to strip away like food aid and support charter schools instead of public schools. And they always say like children are our future, yet they just rip away that future from them.
Yeah, and Colin Tye goes into that too. She says, the worker is weighed down by his family cares and is obliged to compromise with capital. The father and mother are ready to agree to any terms when their children are hungry.
I had that highlighted too. I mean, that's absolutely the truth. And so the family unit gives the capitalists even further control over the working parents because there's leverage.
She also talks about how, like, even in capitalism, schools are starting to take over the education of our children, but the ruling class is afraid to go too far to destroy the family, which is so useful to them.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking how that connects back to, like, how the relations of the production have demanded, like, even under capitalist society, they demanded a new form of family. But like you said, they will only go so far until it starts to hinder their own form of extractive production.
So I highlighted a large section here, but I really love it, and so I'm going to read it. It says, communist society considers the social education of the rising generation to be one of the fundamental aspects of the new life. The old family, narrow and petty, where the parents quarrel and are only interested in their own offspring, is not capable of educating the new person. the playgrounds, gardens, homes, and other amenities where the child will spend the greater part of the day under the supervision of qualified educators will, on the other hand, offer an environment into which the child can grow up a conscious communist who recognizes the need for solidarity, comradeship, mutual help, and loyalty to the collective. What responsibilities are left to the parents when they no longer have to take charge of upbringing and education? The very small baby, you might answer, while it is still learning to walk and clinging to its mother's skirt, still needs her attention. Here again, the communist state hastens to the aid of the working mother. No longer will there be any women who are alone. The workers' state aims to support every mother, married or unmarried, while she is suckling her child, and to establish maternity homes, day nurses, and other such facilities in every city and village in order to give women the opportunity to combine work and society with maternity. It was like the dream, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so at the start of the episode, we generally agreed that regarding the conditions Colin Tai was illustrating at the start of the piece, nothing's really changed for women. And I think this is definitely true, but it's maybe more accurate for us to say that nothing's changed for women under capitalism. And just to acknowledge that the massive strides that were made for women under socialism, even though in the countries where socialism was overthrown, it's not that nothing changed at all, but just that the gains that were made, though of course they were still far from being perfect, they were rolled back.
Right. And the end of here, she basically is talking more about the relationship between men and women and about how now that we no longer have this lens of exploitation, we don't have to have relationships that are exploitative. She says, communist society has this to say to the working woman and working man. You are young. You love each other. Everyone has the right to happiness. Therefore, live your life. Do not flee happiness. And she says, do not fear marriage, even though under capitalism, marriage was truly a chain of sorrow. Do not be afraid of having children. Society needs more workers and rejoices at the birth of every child. You do not have to worry about the future of your child. Your child will know neither hunger nor cold. Communist society takes care of every child and guarantees both him and his mother material and moral support. It just, I really loved this part because what drew me to Colin Tai originally was that, unlike a lot of Marxist theorists, she really thinks about how we function personally and how we need to change the way we do that in order to change the way our society functions. And she talks about, in place of the old relationship between men and women, a new one is developing, a union of affection and comradeship, a union of two equal members of communist society, both of them free, both of them independent, and both of them workers. No more domestic bondage for women. No more inequality within the family.
Affection really got to me.
That hurt my heart.
Yeah. And it's weird because for pretty much every relationship I've been in, I've been the breadwinner. So it's really weird. It's a weird burden to be really weird situation to be in. And I've always felt like she just described like what my dream is. Like, marriage will be a union of two persons who love and trust each other.
And comrades, but also partners.
Right.
Hashtag relationship goals.
And then later on, she says, this is just fire. What she says is, the free and honest union of men and women who are lovers and comrades, prostitution will disappear. Like, she views marriage under capitalism as essentially prostitution, which there's some truth to that. There have been like numerous articles written, especially after the 2008 crash, about how people will stay in marriages or stay in abusive relationships because they can't afford to get their own place. They can't afford to live on their own.
Yeah.
It's still a very real issue. And I agree with her that, it is essentially prostitution.
Right. Well, and she says in the sentence before, or like earlier in the paragraph, that instead of the conjugal slavery of the past, communist society offers women and men a free union, which is strong in the comradeship which inspired it. And so she calls it conjugal slavery.
Yeah.
I mean, I highlighted so much of this last section. It's so good, but I felt especially touched by the way that she talks about removing these burdens, and this lens of exploitation just completely changes the way we treat each other. And she says, there is no more room for the old proprietary attitude, which says, these are my children. I owe them all my maternal solicitude and affection. Those are your children. They are no concern of mine, and I don't care if they go hungry and cold. I have no time for other children. She says, the worker mother must learn not to differentiate between yours and mine. She must remember that there's only our children, the children of Russia's communist workers.
I totally teared up at that part.
No. It's totally not how it is today.
I know. Oh,
I wish.
Yeah, it's like so beautiful to think about a world in which these, like, unfortunately, through capitalism, love turns into this kind of transactional relationship where, like, people end up feeling stuck. And, you know, even in abusive relationships, like we were talking before, you're financially dependent on people, and it just, with all these laws put in place to make it impossible for people to flee these exploitative and power imbalances that are inherent in capitalism and love, it's just, you know, it's a window into a beautiful world.
I think it's interesting too to see the contrast between how the USSR treated mothers and people who had many children compared to how, for example, the UK, the media here, and I guess a lot of the general population looks at people who have many, many children. Like, people who have a lot of kids are often seen as a drain on society, particularly if they're claiming benefits. And now in the UK, we have a benefit cap where I think you're only allowed to claim benefit for two children. And if you have more children, like, it doesn't affect the amount of money that you receive. Whereas the inverse was true in the Soviet Union. Like, the more children you had, the more money you would receive, because they've really placed value in raising children. They even had a couple of awards available to mothers who had raised a lot of kids. There was the maternity medal, which was intended for women who had 5 to 9 children. And then there was the mother heroine award, which was awarded to you on the birth of your 10th child, providing like all 9 were either still alive or had died doing something like in heroic circumstances or in war or something like that. But yeah, there's like a special award was given to people who'd raised, well, I mean, 5 to 9 children, you were given an award, but then an extra one called Mother Heroine, which was, I think, about 430,000 women were given this title while it existed.
Oh my God. That's so many babies.
It's a lot of kids, yeah.
Holy shit.
I mean,
oh my God, what a complete inverse view on maternity. Wow. Like, here it's like it's a freak show. And like, wow, like, we're treated as like, yeah, like even one child is like, oh, you're a drain on society. Like, oh, thanks.
See, here in America, it's, if you're white and have a lot of kids, that's fine. But if you're a person of color and have a lot of kids, that's when the stereotypes come in. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, like, if you're white and have a bunch of kids, that's a TV show. That's entertainment.
Yep.
Yeah, you have, like, fucking reality shows made about you if you're white and have
the
a lot of kids.
Duggars. But,
ugh. Ugh.
And I mean, just the audacity of a state who wants to demonize people who want to have a lot of kids, but at the same time make abortion illegal, and then demonize people who want benefits to look after kids that they've been forced to have. It's just insane.
America, it's not great. Not great at all.
Yeah. Yeah, about America.
Yeah, to all our listeners not from America, it's not recommended.
It is not.
3 stars would not recommend to a friend.
Not good.
So I think that kind of like brings us, the first question we have is, how do childcare and pregnancy and maternity laws of the present compare with those of the USSR in colonized time? And I think we mostly covered that already, but I think the overwhelming take there, at least my personal interpretation, would be that all of the gains that had been made in the USSR and like the GDR are essentially lost once capitalism moves in. And that's basically what we're living in right now. We have no support whatsoever when it comes to being a mother and a worker.
Yeah, we live in hellscape right now.
It's true.
Like, just especially living in Missouri, where they've essentially outlawed abortion, and then we have only one Planned Parenthood, which is in St. Louis, that does abortions, and that's on, like, the border, like, the eastern border of Missouri. So if you're living in, like, 3 hours away in the state, and we have all these draconian laws, like, it's pretty much, they've made it impossible to get an abortion in Missouri. And it's really fucking terrifying.
So horrible. Absolutely horrible. Okay, so the second question is, do you agree with the author's opinions regarding the utility of the traditional family unit? And do you agree with the author's opinions about prostitution? Why or why not?
I agree with her opinion of marriage being prostitution under capitalism. For the most part, I don't think all marriages are like that, but a lot of them are.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the point she was trying to make is just that as we move into communism, or as we move away from capitalism, our relationships are going to change in a radical way too. Like, all of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways of being involved in a family. And the nuclear family that I mentioned earlier is obviously not the only one. I think that the main problem is it's not like what form of family that you're living in. It's what political system you're living under. I think the main contradiction is needing to change the mode of production that people are living under.
Yeah, I think it's a lot about how the modes of production and our relations of production connect back to our social relations, and how we're trying to undo these transactional relationships that create these imbalances and are really part of bolstering a patriarchal society so that we can make love a more equal thing, however you view love for yourself and for others.
I would say I also agree with Colin Tye's opinion on the traditional family unit. I don't think it has utility aside from basically a form of control over the working parents and exploiting labor from the mothers traditionally. And at least as far as the way that Colin Tye brought up prostitution in this light, I do absolutely agree that it is essentially conjugal slavery. I think my comrades before me just mentioned that restructuring the way that our economy and our society functions is exactly what we need to do to liberate all workers, whether they're women or men, or, you know, 100 years later, we recognize that there aren't only two genders. But in 1920, that was not necessarily the way people wrote. So I do want to make that point that whenever Colin Tye is mentioning women, or whenever we're mentioning women in this context, we're referring to the way that Colin Tye is referring to women, and that is essentially people that were perceived as women socially. So that would have been uterus owners at the time. We recognize that is not the definition that is accurate at all. So, yeah, I think that restructuring our society is exactly what needs to happen. And like Anna said, every one of our relationships is going to have to change in order to make that happen. So the last question we have is, why do you think these ideas were considered radical at the time?
They were like the complete opposite of what a family was like under a capitalist society or under a Tsarist Russia. They were like flipped upside down. Like, it must have been like insane to like go from quote unquote a traditional family to what Colin Tye is saying is like, we're all in this together. We'll take care of your child. Don't worry about it. Be a fully formed human being that's not tied to work and your labor at all times.
Right.
Yeah. And these are still considered radical ideas. As we've said, not much has changed for non-men in this country.
Yeah, like when I was a union steward, I was doing a contract negotiations, and I said, why don't we have on-site daycare for our members? And all the union leadership was like, no, no, we can't ask for that. We can't ask for that. I'm like, why not? Like, we should be able to do that for our workers. It didn't seem that insane to me, but, and that was only a couple years ago.
Definitely. Yeah. And I feel like the only way to truly include parents in your organizing is going to be childcare.
Absolutely. The first place we need to apply all this information is in our organizing spaces.
Right. That's why when I read this, I was like, we have to do this for book club. Like, we have to have people talking about this because, like, Colin Ties, you know, it seems radical because it's so vastly different from what we're used to. But it's not radical in that it can't happen or that these aren't the ways to address changing our society. And I think that also what we can take from this is that our interpersonal relationships, our friendships, our comradeships, our intimate relationships, all of those, we need to change the way that we conduct ourselves and those individually. That is something we can do right now. We don't have to wait for a new socialist society to take hold. We don't have to live in a communist state in order to treat the other people that we interact with as equals and as comrades and based on mutual respect and the work that we do together. And so I think that's what I took away from this whole piece. That's why I wanted to read it so badly and make an episode about it, because I wanted to be able to have people talking about changing the way that we treat each other on the individual scale right away.
DSA, for what it's worth, DSA, some locals have on-site like child watching when there's meetings and activities, like someone will watch your kids. And I think that as communists in our organizing spaces, that's something we could do, something we could take from that is, or have the kids involved in some way.
Right.
Yeah, same in, I'm not living there now, but my renters union in London would always make sure there was childcare available for when we were having any kind of meeting, because the majority of people facing housing problems were mothers.
Absolutely. Like, how can you possibly expect to reach out to the proletariat when you're not making a space that's environment for any of them with children?
Thanks for listening. That was Communism and the Family by Alexandra Kollontai. And we hope you listen to the next episode.
Woo!
It's a good.
I loved it. Thank you so much for joining us, Anna.
You guys did good.
Thank you for listening to Red Book Club. If you'd like to reach out to us or to stay posted for episode updates, you can find us on Twitter at RBCpod or visit our new website at redbookclubpod.wordpress.com, where you can find our full episode list and resources such as ebook copies of Alexandra Kollontai's Communism and the Family, which we've just been reading, as well as the future works that we have planned in our Marxist Feminist series and more. If you'd like to join the book club, you can find us on our Patreon at patreon.com/redbookclub, where you can gain access to our Discord server, where we meet every Sunday to discuss what we've been reading. Thank you to the Craigbot for helping us to record, and to Keenan for our intro theme. Join us again next time for more from our series on works by Marxist feminists. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time. Solidarity forever.
Joe working man's wife, that's how I was defined. As if that was my life, my hope and my mind. But I worked in a bake shop, did the housework at night, and there was no time to stop for a young bird in flight. Well, in time there were babies had to make us a home. Joe was working two jobs, and I was always alone. I needed some time and just a little control, just to keep my right mind, just to try to stay whole. I wanted a partner to be his friend, not just his wife. I work hard for my children, but they're my love, not my life. In this world, my kids are in high school, and don't you know the boss calls me girl? But the woman beside me, as we sweat out the line, says tomorrow. And the next day is mine. It's a race for the strong, 'cause it'll grind up the meek. When your money runs short, about the end of a week, and your car needs some tires, an old kind of blues. Now this system buys hands, but you must not use your head. It'll shake you and break you. Till all your senses are dead. Gotta get to the source. I think me and this system got to get a divorce. I can't make enough money, and I can't find enough time. But I'm a hard worker. More where I come from, yeah, and we got anger to burn, but we're talking and moving, we're gonna study and learn, build a unity train. Today is the bosses, I know tomorrow is mine.